This is episode 30 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk some more about Lens. Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. When your friends are gone, when your friends won't come, so show me where you fit. So show me where you fit. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake. And I could totally take off wallpaper just as good as Kevin could. I totally could. I could rock at that.
I don't know about that.
What do you? I'm handy. I know things. I can do things.
Handy is not a word I would use to describe you.
I'm handy. Mm. Like I can like build stuff.
Mm, yeah.
And
I don't know if you would want to sit on that. I remember when you built those those chairs.
You're gonna have to bring this up, aren't you?
Yeah, and I fell because it broke.
I built stools, custom made stools for a countertop that we put into our old kitchen, and Mary sat on them about a year later, and they broke underneath her.
And I'm not like that big.
Nope, she's not. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. Listen, hey, it could be worse. I could be talking to Patty the entire time. How's that sound for you?
That sounds better.
Now, if you hear some munching going on, my wife is eating pie.
Maybe that's why I broke a chair. I'm eating pie.
Eating pie and whipped cream. It's pumpkin pie, as a matter of fact.
With a glass of wine.
With a glass of wine. Classy broad.
It's been a long day, guys.
Very long day.
It's been raining for 3 days in Rhode Island, and my kids have not gotten outside.
So it's crazy. Well, my love, we're here for another epic event. Another award-winning, Emmy-nominated, Tony-nominated, actually Oscar-winning.
Ooh, Tony?
Yeah, who's Tony singing? Nominated. We're Oscar-winning, as a matter of fact, too. I think we also have a Marconi in there as well. Listener feedback, extravaganza.
Woo-hoo.
For this fantastic episode of Lens. Any initial thoughts before we get into it?
I just want to hear what everyone had to say.
You just know me and you know everything. Well, what did we forget from last week? Well, the first one is that the goat guy, he was in the initial shots of the scientist coming through and going touring through what's it called there? Through the town. So he's still walking around. I think we've seen this goat literally.
You mean every the goat single, guy?
Yeah, the goat guy and goats every episode. Oh!
Not the same goat. The goats get killed.
Yeah, I know. But I think the only one that we have not seen a goat in is the Lori and Tommy episode.
I like it.
I think that's it.
Continuity.
Second thing we forgot was Dr. Joaquin Cuarto, a.k.a. Lorenzo Lamas. He was talking about causality in the beginning part of the episode. That was one of the first things he said as the episode began. And now causality. What exactly is causality? Well, luckily, we looked it up.
You did. I didn't. I'm like, I do not know that word. SATs.
Causality is also referred to as causation or cause and effect. It is the relation between one process, the cause, and another, the effect, where the first is understood to be partly responsible for the second. In general, a process has many causes, which are said to be causal factors for it.
What the hell is all this? Just say it was the cause.
And all lie in its past. And an effect can be in turn to be many causes of other effects, which also lie in its future.
Once again, it was the cause.
So ultimately, I think this is referring to the Lens idea, or perhaps Nora being Asriel, the archangel of death, I don't really think that's the case. I don't. I will say, though, it is very nice how the writers have brought in these ideas to the show it may not be like a legitimate thing. We may all laugh at it or whatever.
Just fleshes out the world.
But they're building out the world, correct? They're making a very textured and layered world. And it's representative, I think, in my opinion, of the stuff that would actually happen in real life.
Oh my God, yeah.
There would totally be these crazies out there. They'd be like, dude, demons are in you, bro. You know that thing, Asriel? Yeah. Wait.
I Googled that shit.
I Googled him. And like, he's in you. Like, all of his wings and arms and all of that other shit, that's in you. So you could totally tell that this world is being built out. And I think it's a fantastic choice by the writers. And lastly, the last thing that we wanted to bring up is Kevin flinching during the sex scene. And we all know, the apparent sex scene before Lily played cock block with Nora and didn't make it happen. But Kevin flinching right before they, you know, get the boogie on here. And I think it's because he sees Patty, obviously.
Yeah, it got awkward there for a moment.
Imagine her like sitting there looking at you. Like,
oh my God.
Like ripping butts.
No, she'd be having commentary. So you know Patty talks when they have sex.
Oh, God.
Patty's there all the time.
I can't imagine that.
Well,
she's
happens.
Just sitting there with her white shirt on looking at you.
That's why he flinched.
You made a bad choice, Kevin. So that's that. My love, are you ready to get in the listener feedback for this episode?
Yep.
All right, well, the first one is an email from John Callahan. He said, I give this episode 3 out of 5 Damons, which, man, I think that's a little low for this episode. Normally, there's just too many loose ends to tie after these episodes. And in this case, there's only 2 for me. And I'm very happy that they sealed the deal with with numbers on the audio tour answer. But my 2 questions regarding this that they are, number 1, why did Nora stone the window? Why did she throw the stone through the window? And number 2, how did Erica know that Nora threw the stone?
Oh, poor John. See, because John's a guy. John, you don't get this because you're male.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna let you sit with that statement for just a second. I'm not gonna save you. I'm gonna let you go down that path.
Girls know, man. Girls know. I tell Blake this all the time. Every girl has a little bitch in her.
Ooh,
right?
There you go.
I tell him this all the time. You got to look out for other girls, and not in a good way. Not like got their back. You gotta watch out. Girls can get nasty. And Nora got nasty on Erica, and it makes sense. I'm mad at you. We discussed it this last episode. I'm mad at you because you disrespected my brother, mm-hmm. and I'm mad because your daughter's now disappeared and all this stuff's going on in my life.
Correct. That's what I'm going to go with you on that one. I think you're great.
And Erica knew. Because Nora was a bitch.
That's right.
And she thought, oh my God, I knew who threw that frickin' rock.
Well, why was she a bitch? Let's just put it out there so we can
put
a stamp on this.
Asking all those questions in the way that she did.
Yep.
Instead of being a caring, compassionate fellow mother, saying, wow, you're going through a lot of stuff. Let's go through this together and I'm going to hold your hand. No, Nora was mean.
Nora says, I evolved. You don't know what the last thing your kid said to you was?
Yeah.
And then immediately Erica turns it. Like, it was so great seeing that momentum switch from Nora being like, I evolved, being like kind of bitchy, to all of a sudden say Erica saying, did they die or did they depart?
What do you think are the answers to John's questions?
Oh, I think what you said is the exact answer. I totally agree. Nora was scared. Because of the departures. She was angry because of the departures. And she was frustrated because they screwed with Matt and they screwed with Mary. And they, you know what? Hey, let's be honest here, too. Nora's got a lot of shit going on. She's got Mary being there, so she's got to take care of Mary left and right. We've already seen that. Then she's got a baby who is constantly needy. You know that more than any of us. Those babies require a lot of goddamn attention. And, oh, yeah, hey, by the way, you also have a boyfriend, we can call like a pseudo husband here, who's losing his mind, and you gotta handcuff him to the bed because he disappears at night. Now, we all think that's cute. I thought it was cute, but when you start looking at it in real life, That's kind of fucked up. That's kind of weird, bro. You need to be chained to your bed so you don't move, so you don't go looking for chickens like Mary. That is weird. So Noro is dealing with all of this, and then all of a sudden, now we got these departures again. She's calling 911 again. Kevin woke up in the middle of this pond, almost died, and has his handprint on this woman's on the girl's car. It's crazy talk. So she's nuts. And then for Erica, obviously throwing the stone, it's because she found out that she realized that Nora was the one who threw the rock through her house as well. And she said basically it's a fuck you back to him. It's a total F you back to Nora, because that's it. So my love, what do we got on Facebook?
Greg Cuckoo? Is that how you'd say it? C-U-O-C-O?
Cuoco?
Cuoco? Cuoco? Yeah. I don't know. Greg.
I'm going to go with an Italian name on that one.
Greg said the showdown between Nora and Erica was shot really well, and both of these women are now rivals, where they could have been a team. Now that we know that the town was doing on 10/14 on the departure day, it seems that birds are no longer going to be resurrected in Jardin, and that Nora may have something to do with that. Could she really be the earthly embodiment of the Archangel of Death, Azrael? Not sure how science is going to prove that, but it might give us a clue as to her honey badger behavior.
Do you really think that she is the Archangel Azrael? Do you really, like, are we really going to go there? Do you think that's a possibility for this show? Because it's almost a little out there.
Listen, I don't like to talk about any kind of possession stuff. It freaks me out. So I'm going to say no.
I'm going to go with that as well. Suzanne Marone Carew says, this episode was beyond intense. So many questions answered, which I felt was important at this juncture so that the viewers can focus on the main conflicts and not get distracted by things like goats and brides and numbers on streets. Loved the introduction of various departure theories and the internal turmoil that presented for Nora. The acting was off the charts by all. Neither my husband nor I, thank you for the correct grammar use, by the way, neither my husband nor I exhaled for the last 15 to 20 minutes of the episode. I was floored by Erica's revelation that she was planning to leave John and didn't see that coming. And now I'm left wondering whether Erica confided her plans to Evie via their conversation and sign language in an earlier episode. This episode could also be retitled, Be Careful What You Wish For. Now, Suzanne, that is an idea. That is an amazing idea. Do you think, my darling, that Erica planned this out and then had a conversation with Evie about it in sign language? Because remember, when we were talking about this at the time, we were like, they're keeping John out of this conversation for a reason. Do you think that that is what it could be happening here? Do you think Erica took the money out and was going, oh my God, here we go. Here's an idea.
I'm ready for it.
Was going to take Evie with her. What do you think? You're just going to drink some water and leave me hanging here?
I think Evie liked her dad too much.
Ah, okay. And that's why they were arguing? Perhaps she was planning on taking Evie?
No, I don't think Evie knew.
At all?
No.
Okay. Then why have that conversation then?
I don't know what they were conversing about. Maybe they were conversing about superpowers with birds. You never know.
I mean, that's possible.
If it's maybe like a female trait that gets handed down from her grandmother, maybe mm-hmm. It's a girl thing. I don't know. Melanie Lynn said, what do you think Lori did to Tommy to say that she was sorry? We know what happened with Meg, but what do you think else happened?
Yeah, see, now this is a very salient question. I mean, well, a very pertinent question. Because Lori did say to Nora, please tell him I'm sorry. What could Lori, the mother of her child, mother of Tommy, their special relationship, what could she have done to Tommy to, one, force him out, and two, say that she was sorry?
And maybe it's not even what she did to Tommy. You know, as we saw, Lori was smoking. She's kind of beside herself. Like, she lost it. I'm wondering how much of it is, I'm sorry I effed up. Mm-hmm. I thought I was okay, and I lost it.
Maybe she pushed him too much.
She definitely did. But, I mean, asking him to do all that mm-hmm. was inappropriate of a mother. I said it before, and I'll say it again. She was putting her son in danger. And even though he was saying he was cool with it, that's just not cool.
And we all know that she is obsessed with the GR. Totally, completely obsessed. So she would probably do anything to get people out of the GI, number one, and number two, to make sure they stay out of the GI. And Tommy, because of his magic fucking hugs, whether or not he has the ability or not, she's putting him in a position where he has to be the reason why people stay. And I wonder if he started saying, "Ma, this ain't working." Yeah, we can tell these people want every once in a while, but after a while, these people are going to start realizing they don't work. And she kept probably saying,
unless it's real.
Okay, here's the issue I have with this. Here's the thing. It'd be redundant and it would be lazy writing if you have Holy Tommy.
Oh my God, I was just saying it would be really cool and exciting.
Well, let me finish. Because it would be the same thing for having a second Depatcha. I don't want a second Depatcha. I really don't. Because it takes away from the seriousness of the event of the first one. All we have to go on for the first Depatcha was all these people disappeared, right? Even though we didn't know any of them, even though we really don't give a shit about any of them, maybe except for Nora's kids and her husband, because we had a little bit more of a relationship with them than everybody else. But it takes away from the severity of that if we have a second one. It's just like, okay, well, then how many are we going to have a departure every season? I don't want that. I mean, and the threat of it is cool, but I don't want to have it every season. Because if you have one now, then you got to have one that two seasons later. Because then it's like the narrative driving force of the show itself. That's what creates the conflict. So if you have one every season, it just slowly denigrates the whole thing. And I don't want that. And that's why I can't have a second Holy Tommy, because it denigrates the whole Holy Wayne thing. Do you know what I mean?
On the other hand, I feel like we've really kind of explored the departure and explored the different sides of it. And I don't feel like I explored this special hug stuff that much.
Okay. Even though you already seen it with Holy Wayne, like you saw it in action with Nora.
Yeah, but I only saw it in action with Nora, and I wasn't supposed to like Holy Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I'd be cool with Tommy having superpowers. I really would.
He's not a mutant. It's not Magneto going around there.
I don't know. You have no idea.
Rafael C. Ferreira says, I'm 100% sure. 100% sure that Nora will visit Lori next week. But the question is why? Also, I'm confused. On episode 4, Patty told Kevin that if he really loved his family, then why wouldn't he tell them about her? And now she told him that he made a big mistake telling Nora? Curious. What do you think about that?
You know, I think it's 6 of 1, 6 of 1, a dozen of another. I think Patty's, you're screwed if you do and you're screwed if you don't. You're screwed, Kevin, period.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think she could probably say both at the same time.
Exactly.
Meaning, listen, if you actually really loved your family, you would tell them. I'm not saying it's the right choice to tell them, but if you loved them, you would tell them.
Russell McVicker says on Facebook, so we learned that Erica was going to leave John and she wanted to make sure Evie was going to be okay with me, without me. Are you serious? Do you really think we would believe that she would make a wish on a bird in a box that her child would be okay without me? She may have wished for Evie to get away safely, but there is no way in hell that she would leave Evie alone with a man that has to hit people. No way! She's covering for Evie's plan to escape this town. She's pushing departure so they will stop looking for her.
Ah, okay.
Very, very interesting, Russell.
Very astute point because, okay, so now we're flipping the script here. Instead of Erica taking Evie, Erica knows that she is planning, that Evie is planning to leave. And she's covering for Evie. So she's sticking with this whole idea. I don't know.
I like it.
I like that idea too.
I like it a lot.
I think that'd be very smart.
Miracle.
I still think that was just an inappropriate usage of that song during this fundraiser for the girls that departed.
Yeah.
It was
way too happy, A, and then B, are you kidding? You're talking about people not departing.
I know. at a departure, what, at a departure fundraiser. It's just so stupid. Like, the guy, the event planner for that event should be fired.
Yes, but I agree.
In fact, he should give the money back. He should just give the money back and say, I'm a dick, and then go relieve Matt Jameson over in the stockade. That's what should happen so that person can repent. Robert M. Smith says, did anyone notice the eyelash on Nora's right cheek when she was prepping the doc for the DSD questions? Find an eyelash and make a wish.
I did not notice
that. I did. I went back and I looked, and there was this little teeny tiny eyelash below her eye. Like, you know how when an eyelash falls off of your eye, your eyelid, and it just gets stuck on your face?
Of course.
That happened. That was there, and it was there the entire time. That entire scene, it was there. Even when they went close up on her face, at when she was having the conversation with Erica, it was there. So that means either one, they did this all in one take, or two, they saw it and they left it. They were like, no, keep it there. Don't move. No one sneeze. No one cough. Keep the eyelash on there, because it was just this little bit of attention to detail. Either way, how cool is that?
Very.
Like, if they did that all in one take.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be freaking crazy. Now, this one is from Carolyn Daly, and you may or may not know the name Carolyn Daly. She and her husband have a podcast called The Daily Review, and they talk about The Leftovers, and I had a chance to listen to this podcast, and they're very nice people. They're actually very similar to Mary and I, as a matter of fact. So if you don't like what you hear here, or we don't provide enough comfort for you in The Leftovers world, please go listen to The Daily Review, and they talk about The Leftovers, and it's actually spelled Daley, Daily Review, just like their last name. Anyway, Carolyn Daly says, it makes a ton of sense that it was a planned Evie-Erica escape, because to me, Erica and Michael are much more calm about the situation. John is out drinking and beating people up and trying to get answers. Erica isn't cooperating with the DSD, and they haven't shown her being very active in the search. Michael is resigned to the fact that she is gone, and even though he cries, it seems like he's crying perhaps over the fact that his family is breaking up. Let's assume that there have been fights that he does hear. He's out there scraping the sticker off, never looking for her or trying to figure out anything. I agree with everything else, the money, the sign language, etc. I have three deaf adult friends looking at the sign language again to give me their very best translation of what they were saying.
Yes.
Excellent thought. And here's the thing, too. After John Murphy left to go search, Erica just sat there at the table.
No, she got a phone call.
She did get the phone call.
Bum, bum, bum. But Evie's phone was in the car.
What if she called? Payphone? She could have called the payphone.
I don't know if they have payphones anymore.
Well,
that's not around us.
Valid point. Well, it's Texas, you know, and like it's like Miracle Texas, kind of like run down and dingy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she did get that phone call.
Yeah.
And they put that, it was conspicuous. They put it in there for a reason. And everyone's forgetting about this.
I didn't.
No, you didn't. That's why you're the best. That's why I married you. That's just it. By the way, before I forget, I wanted to mention that this episode was written by Damon Lindelof, obviously, and Tom Parada, which is awesome because we got a chance to talk to him. But this episode was also directed by Craig Zobel. Do you want to know who Craig Zobel is?
Yes.
He is actually a film director. And what he is most famous for is a movie that just came out called Z for Zachariah. And he's also done, let's see, I got it right here. Come on, where are you? He's also done, come on, my computer is acting so freaking slow. The movie Compliance. Now, both of these movies are excellent movies. So please go watch them. I recommend them. I think Compliance is on Netflix. And Z for Zachariah just came out. It's starring Chiwetel Ejiofor and also Chris Pine, as a matter of fact. Please go watch them. And the fact that this guy directs films the way that he does, it lends credence to how well directed this episode was, especially with the running scenes and then the final conflict between Erica and Nora, how they came close up on the face like that. it shows you that these guys know exactly what they're doing, and this guy is extremely talented. So I just wanted to mention that. On Instagram, we had JohnnyDean088. He says, my guess is Nora's just confused and a bit scared. This whole season is dedicated to her fear losing the beloved ones once again. Fear does get you confused at times, but she's far too witty and experienced to believe in some damn questionnaires. She's going to make it, I'm sure, in Nora we trust. The Blanco Latino. Wow, great name. Where did Tom go? Regardless of the demon explanation, is Nora a catalyst in departing events? And why does Kevin get away with beating people up? I think he means John.
I think so, too.
I think he means John. I have no idea where Tommy went. My sudden theory of the week last week was that he got captured by Meg, but stayed because he was lured and he really likes Meg. And the funny thing is, guys, what you don't know right now is actually we actually had to pause the recording while I was in the middle of, well, after what I just said, because here's a little inside information. My kid is now crying, and my wife, my beautiful darling wife, Mary, is upstairs tending to my daughter, Felicity. So now you're stuck with me. You're stuck with me for the foreseeable future, and I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but either way, that's what you got. So, moving on. Following up on Instagram, maybe Kaylee says, I find it odd that Nora believes in these dumb questionnaire questions enough to ask Erica them. And maybe. Does she believe in them? I don't know. But I think she wanted to do a test. She wanted to test herself. She wanted to test Erica. She wanted to see if she was, in fact, the lens. She wanted to see if Erica, I think, was playing a little bullshit with her. Because remember, she said to the daughter there, Jill, that she was part of the DSD fraud team. She would be able to tell if someone was faking it, if someone was actually telling lies. And I think she did that to partially figure out if Erica was actually telling a lie. I like this idea, but she was trying to figure out herself. So I think that's the reason why she was asking Erica these questions. Not because she believed in them necessarily, like she was going to get an answer, but because she was just trying to help figure it out for herself. On Twitter, Francois Gregory says, I think the DSD guy in Miracle is not there to figure out what happened to the three girls, but is investigating Nora. Now, this is an epic idea, and I wish my wife was sitting across the way from me because I would love her opinion on this, damn it. If this guy was investigating Nora to see what she would do, and if she is, in fact, a lens, because he is talking about this lens idea, and the idea that Nora could be a lens to the DSD, I think is an enticing one, especially if this is newer research that they had suggested within the show. So maybe he's not there testing out the testing to see if the DSD is there, testing to see if the girls disappeared, or testing Erica. But maybe it was just it's a bait and switch. Oh, Francois, man, you are so freaking smart. What a great idea. Stefan AJS on Twitter says, Carrie Coon and Ben Mendelsohn are the two best actors on TV right now, in my opinion. Hashtag leftovers, hashtag bloodline. Now, if any of you have been following me as of late, you all know that I'm having a major, major nerd alert love affair, nerdgasm, like total like love fest with Bloodline, and I am on record. I am on the freaking record that's saying Bloodline is one instance, one little snippet away from being a perfect first season of television. I mean, literally perfect first season of television. There's this one thing at the end of that, a minor thing. Well, within the context of the story, a major thing, but a minor thing overall to the importance of the season. It's important going forward. But that one little thing didn't ruin it, but it took away from the perfect first season. Why am I saying all this? Because the second season of The Leftovers, as Brian had mentioned in the last episode of the Brian David's Thought of the Week, This season, for the second season for The Leftovers, is batting 1,000. Now, for those of you who are not famous or good on baseball, that means they are hitting every note. It is perfect. They've gotten hits on every at-bat. Every time an episode come out, they've knocked it out of the park, essentially. And that is what Bloodline did. And Carrie Coon is a major, major part of that. She was a huge part of that the first season and an even bigger part of the second season. So I'm hoping that for episodes 7, 8, 9, and 10, they continue this streak. And I see no reason why they can't. They've gone through the building process of Miracle. They've gone through the building process of trying to get the Murphys involved and bringing up Matt and everything. And now they're just taking the building process that they've created and they're just going forward with the whole notion, right? They said, screw it. We're just going to take the story and move it forward. So there's no reason why they can't. And I'm really excited about that. So I just wanted to give you credit for bringing that up. Next on Twitter, Ian Knight says, "You can tell when I like a TV show and a podcast when I listen to more than one of them. And I just listened to 5 of the Living Reminders episodes in a row." First of all, we all know that we have a sound for all new listeners. And Ian Knight, this one's for you. In the bank, one more time. You know what? That was so special. You listened to 5 episodes in a row. I'll play it again for you. Because 5 episodes of The Living Reminders is not an easy feat, my friend. Especially for this season. Because early episodes were 1.5 hours to 1 hour and 40 minutes each before we started breaking them up in between these listener feedback ones and primary ones. So I am extremely proud of you for doing that. I think that is freaking awesome. And welcome to the family, my friend. It's a crazy family. Kids cry, my wife departs halfway through the episode, and I take over, and it's crazy. So, but again, thank you very much. Clint Church says, "I have a sudden theory. The GR infiltrated Miracle, Texas, long before the Gavis arrived, and the finale will mirror season 1's Memorial Day episode." I love the idea of the GR infiltrating Miracle without anybody knowing. I think that is great. Because they could get in there, they could do the thing that they got to do, and it would take everybody by surprise. And I like that a lot. The only issue I have, again, it's this repetitive thing, which is it would take away from the severity of the season 1's Memorial Day episode. It would a little bit. Is it indicative of things being new again? I suppose. Would it be shocking for the residents of Miracle? Yes. And would it be cool to see? I suppose. But I don't want to take away from how heavy it was in the Prodigal Son Returns of season 1. I don't want to take away from that because that was, I'm going to use this term lightly, but special. It was special for season 1 and it is it's special to that. And I want to keep it there. I don't want to rehash it if I don't have to. Although I will say this. I love The Leftovers. I really do. It's right now, it is by far the best show on television. I love doing this show. I love doing this podcast. I love watching the show The Leftovers. It's one of my favorite pastimes. It really is. The issue with The Leftovers that I have is there has not been a signature moment quite yet. There hasn't been. Oh, as a matter of fact, I got it right here. There hasn't been this.
We have to go back, Kate.
There hasn't been that. There hasn't been "I am the one who knocks" from Breaking Bad. There hasn't been that yet. Okay. And there's other instances where I could spout off for other TV shows that have a signature moment. But The Leftovers does not have one yet. Now, if you want to call in or you want to tweet to me or Facebook me or send me an email and you want to make a case for there being a signature moment, the one that defines the show, I will go along to get along, and I would love to hear the case. But as of right now, there are a lot of good ones. There is the Memorial Day shenanigans. There is the Garveys at their best. There is the holding up the signs, stop wasting your breath. But that's not a signature thing. It hasn't changed the fabric of the show yet. Now, I know we're only in season 2, And for in the case of Lost, we have to go back. Kate happened in season 3. And even further, even a better example of this is I'm the One Who Knocks in Breaking Bad. That spoiler alert, that happens in season 4. So we still do have time for the leftovers to find this signature moment. But it's not going to get into the great pantheon of shows. It's not going to be a Breaking Bad. It's not going to be a Lost. It's not going to be Friday Night Lights or and any one of the great shows of the modern era, Sopranos even, until it has this signature moment. And I think that's important to note. All right, on to the voicemails.
Hey, Mary and Blake, it's Rafe Collins. Excellent, excellent episode. I said on the Facebook page that Damon Lindelof seems to be, in a sense, punishing us for our need for answers, or some of us anyway, by giving us answers that raise more questions or giving us answers that don't really make any sense. For instance, the scientist who referenced the demon Azazel, and I'm sure I'm not saying his name correctly, what self-respecting scientist would give an answer like that? People that believe in the scientific method or are dealing in the scientific method, no self-respecting scientist, I think, would give that kind of answer and then say that they had scientific proof that the demon existed. So I thought that was really interesting, and I also thought it was a red herring. It's what I call a Lindelof red herring. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I think that's a rather useless piece of information to throw you off. Sounds like John has a violent past. Well, we kind of knew that, but this confirms it. I think that Erica's a battered wife, and I think that her father might have done something inappropriate either to her or to Evie. The conversation between the two of them and the conversation between Erica and Michael seems to suggest that he did something pretty dire and pretty inappropriate, which is why they've cut off all contact with him. I think the confrontation between Erica and Nora was epic. I think they have a lot in common, and I think, unfortunately, that Nora has swallowed the party line working for the Department of Sudden Departures. I think there are a lot of things that the government told the American people in this case to keep them from panicking. Not because they had information, not because they really knew what was going on, but under the guise of science and statistics, they told people things that just weren't true or that they did not know for sure. For the biggest lie being that the departure was a one-time event, that it would never happen again, and anything like that, anything suggesting such, was indicative of fraud.
Okay, so here we go. Thank you very much, Ray, for calling in. And I'm not even going to pretend to legitimize the whole conversation with Asriel. I'm not going to do that. You're right. The only thing I will say is that you are in a crazy world in The Leftovers, and perhaps scientists are grasping at anything to get their hands on to try to explain it. And that may mean that they are now resorting to going to like all these different kinds of like even like biblical things. Because yes, science can push religion, but there is a gray area, and there are things that science cannot tell us. That's a whole different other podcast, and I'm not even going to get into it. But there are things that science cannot tell us. And the only thing that you can use for an explanation. All right, you know what? Here we go. All right. I'm all worked up now. I'm just going to go with it, okay? Science cannot tell you why, if a person dies, why they cannot come back to life. It cannot tell you that. there's something magical about life. There is something that when the person dies, something just goes away and there's no explanation. You should be able to restart a heart. You should be able to restart a brain. It, according to science, it should happen. You should be able to do it. But for whatever reason, you cannot create life again out of nothing. I mean, you cannot create life out of something that is dead. The only thing that can explain that is that there's something else. And whatever that is, I don't know. And I don't pretend to know. I don't pretend to know, but science cannot explain it. So perhaps these scientists are saying, I don't have an answer, so let's try to think of something else. Let's think outside of the box. That being said, I literally do not believe that happened. I just think that this is probably a crazy person calling Nora saying, hey, Asriel is in your body. And as for the government lying to the people, hell yeah, of course they're going to do that. Of course they're going to say all that stuff to keep people calm. 140 freaking million people disappeared. Of course they would. So I'm going to leave it at that. Let's go to the next one.
Hi, this is James from Houston. I have a quick theory that I wanted to share with you guys about the leftovers. I believe that the guilty remnants are partly responsible for Evie's disappearance in some kind of way of kidnapping them to teach the people of America a lesson and the people of the world a lesson that nowhere is kind of that there's no real hope about the departure. And another interesting thing I found in this episode of Leftovers was about the issue of the stone thrown through the window of the Garvey by Erica. And I feel like if Erica believes Nora is responsible for the initial stone thrown through her glass, then it's kind of a situation of throwing a stone in a glass house, that old idiom kind of thing, where Nora's kind of been accusing Erica of being this person that's with nefarious purposes and hiding Evie and something like that. But it now becomes an accusation against Nora and Kevin that they could be involved in how Evie disappeared.
Well, James, thank you for calling in. And first of all, I like the idea that the GR may be responsible for the girls disappearing, which would go back to Clint's idea that the GR have infiltrated Miracle, which would make sense. Although I still have to reference the idea that you saw that one clip in the beginning, meaning the premiere, of Evie and all the girls running naked through the woods. Are they running from somebody? Because that's a good idea. That's quite a good idea, as a matter of fact. Maybe they're running from somebody. But why would they be naked? I'm thinking this through as this podcast is going along, so bear with me as I do this. Why are they naked? Are they naked because somebody tried to take advantage of them? And who would be trying to take advantage of them? Could it be the members of the GR trying to take advantage of them? Wow. I'm starting to like this idea a little bit because that would then bring the GR back. But it back into the fold. But again, do I want to see the GR in Miracle? I'm not sure if I do. I'm not sure if it's necessarily important to see the GR in Miracle because the Miracle isn't about the GR. It's about finding a new story for Kevin and for Nora and the Murphys and the Garveys. Their stories are now intertwined. So I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. I think, yeah. I'm just thinking about this as it goes along. Let's get into the next one.
Hey, fellow lefties, it's Missy. Most of you know me as Missy G. Ortiz on Twitter. And I'm also the editor-in-chief at the Living Reminders blog and a proud and active member of the Leftovers group chat on Facebook. First off, I loved how they started out with Jim James's state-of-the-art AEIOU song. I love that song. Many thanks to the music supervisors of the series. We're getting quite a phenomenal soundtrack this season, just like we did last season. And you can actually find most of the songs available on Spotify. Just look up the Leftovers on HBO playlist on Spotify if you have an account, and you'll find that the songs are pretty much in chronological order from season one up until now. So it's really cool, and I listen to it religiously, like every day. So I usually talk about my favorite scenes of the episode, but this whole episode was my favorite scene. Dr. Quarto, who played the scientist, reminded me of Desmond from Lost. Just the whole rushing in and the music in the background gave me a Lost feeling all over again. Lindelof is quite the Easter bunny, isn't he? Okay, Blake, play the cue.
We have to go back, Kate.
I especially enjoyed very much the call from Lori to Nora. I almost fell off the couch on that scene. And then the Texas Style Departure Melody by Max Richter. Everyone is talking about that too. It just fit in so perfect. It was amazing and beautiful. So this time, guys, I have a random thought that I wanted to share. Sort of a sudden theory. Baby Lily is Holy Wayne's baby. Tommy took her to Kevin's house. Nora and Kevin adopted her. Now they live in Miracle. The Murphys' Evie has disappeared, and I'm thinking that baby Lily will end up in the arms of the Murphys. I just feel that she could be replacing Evie as a way to fill the void, so to speak. I don't want anything to happen to Nora or Kevin, of course, but could it just be that baby Lily's purpose was to arrive in Miracle to complete the Murphys family, or maybe to alleviate their pain? I thought of this today, and if I'm reaching, let me know. But I want to know if anyone else has thought of this. If so, maybe I missed it. But let me know, send me a tweet or message me on Facebook. And I'm curious, you know, so this is what I've been thinking about and seriously, seriously thinking about it. Please remember, everyone, visit the Living Reminders blog. You know where to find us at thelivingreminders.com. Click on the blog link. And we have lots of articles. If you haven't caught up with reading all of them, we have some awesome writers on the team. And we're throwing out some great stuff for you guys. So be sure to check it out. Thanks, Mary and Blake, for letting me share my thoughts. And we'll talk to y'all soon. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Missy, for calling in. I'll say the idea with Lily becoming part of the Murphys family. I don't know how to reason it, but I think that's pretty viable. It would also lend credence to the idea of Patty saying, "I can't tell if this is their story or yours," and Lily could be the go-between on them. She could be the translator of all of that, right? She could be the common denominator of why it could be their story or the others. So I like this idea too, actually. It's a little out there, and I would be disappointed that Lily would leave the Garvey Durst family. I would wonder why she would do that or how that would end up like that. The only way I see that happening is if something happens to either Kevin or Nora. And more importantly, I would think it'd be Nora, because I don't think Kevin would be capable of handling a baby and Patty and all the other stuff going on at the same time. So that is the only way I see Lily ending up in the hands of the Murphys. And, by the way, that would also fall in line with my first sudden theory of the week, that Nora's going to die by the season's end because Kevin has to pay for the things that he's been doing and going on. So, I think, you know, I like your idea. Everyone's coming up with these great sudden theories this week. You guys freaking rock. Well, as for now, it is time for the tweet of the week. This week's tweet of the week is by Enchantingly Stabby. She says, or he or she says, and this isn't going to play well on the podcast, and I apologize for it, but he or she says, I'm running out of ways to convince people to watch The Leftovers, so look at this cat, then watch The Leftovers. And it's just a picture of a cat in space, and it's like going back and forth, like zooming in and out, and it's freaking hysterical. And when I saw it, I laughed my ass off. So that's why, even though it doesn't translate well to the podcast, I'm going to put the tweet up on this particular website so you can see it. It's freaking funny as hell. And that is why it is the tweet of the week. So stabbing, enchantingly stabby, congratulations for being this week's tweet of the week. And enchantingly stabby, if you don't know, since you won the tweet of the week, you win a $20 gift card to Tag Your It Etsy shop, and you can get anything you want there, as a matter of fact, whether it's Leftovers related, or if you're a fan of Outlander, or if it's just something that you want that is like totally your own design. Dawn, the owner, she is fantastic. She responds very quickly. She will make anything that your heart desires that you can come up with, really. Whatever your imagination says, she can make it for you. So you have a $20 gift card. Please go to www.tagyourit.biz, that's B-I-Z, and redeem your $20 gift card there. As for final thoughts, again, I just want to reiterate the fact that this show is firing on all cylinders and is quickly becoming nearly a perfect season. I do want to see this signature moment. I do want to see this one's for you, Missy.
We have to go back, Kate.
I do want to see that. I want to see something where I go, holy effing shit. Like, that just blew my freaking mind. There have been things like that, but there hasn't been that we have to go back, Kate, yet. And I want to see that, and that will make it one of the best seasons of television ever, without a doubt. But it is still firing on all cylinders. Every episode has been great. It's been building on each episode has been building on the former each time. The narrative is moving quickly. We haven't seen much filler. Not like The Walking Dead this season. The Walking Dead this season has actually been very subpar, in my opinion. For those of you who are Dead fans, I'm sorry. I love The Walking Dead. As a matter of fact, I thought season 5 was its best yet. But season 6 so far has been subpar. But anyway, this is not a Walking Dead podcast. But this episode, this season of The Leftovers has been very nearly perfect, and I'm waiting for it to keep going. I feel awkward. I don't have Mary here to help me say things. I don't have Mary here for transitions. I'm not the host. I'm the color guy. I just show up and say shit. You know, like I'm not good by myself. I'm nervous. What have I done? What have I done to myself? I should not have continued this show. It's been awkward as hell. I'm not a good host. Thank you for bearing with me, guys. And thank you for letting me rant and think as I'm podcasting at the same time and just coming up with random theories. And I don't want to say wasting your time, but hopefully I was entertaining. I would hope at the very least. Well, my love, who's not there? not there sitting across from me. Are you ready to close out the show? Yes, Blake. Good. We're going to close out the show. No, I'm not losing my mind, I promise. Well, we want to continue the conversation with you guys, so if you want to get in touch with us for the next listener feedback episode that we do each week, you can reach us on any social media platform that there is, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, freaking smoke signals, anything that there is, we're on it, and our handle is Living Reminders. And then, if the social media isn't enough for you and you just feel like you got to say a lot more to us, you can always reach us at livingreminders@gmail.com. And then you can go to the livingreminders.com where you can find all of our episodes, including these listener feedback episodes and the primary episodes that we do for each particular episode. And then all of the great interviews that range from Carrie Coon and Ann Dowd, Christopher Eccleston, Mimi Leader, Max Richter, the one that we just did, Amy Brenneman, the one we did just before that. We have all the key players for this show to come at and comment and give us a better experience and better insight into the show. You'll be able to find all there. While you're at the livingreminders.com, you can hit there's a little button on the top right-hand corner that says support. And there are many ways you can support the Living Reminders, one of which is going to Patreon and donating a dollar or two each month. And we would gladly accept that. But, you know, money aside or whatever, it's important, but it's not as important as the support that you could give us by telling a friend that we exist. Tell a friend that we exist, that the show exists, that The Leftovers, and that there is this great community of nerds who like to nerd out and talk about this amazing show, that this nearly perfect season of television, and that this is a forum for that show. And that there are other podcasts like the Jay and Jack podcast or the Guilty Remnant or the Daily Review, as a matter of fact. Tell them that this community exists, including our show. And you can do that also by going to iTunes and writing a review and giving us a rating, whether it's 1 star, 2 stars, 5 stars, 4, whatever. Whatever you think we deserve, preferably I'd like 5, but if you think we deserve 2 or 3 or 1, give us that rating, because we need to know what we do. And we challenge you to get 70 reviews, and you got it. And it's only November 12th or 13th, I think. And we have 70 reviews. And we have a winner, and it's Melanie Lynn. So we will get in touch with you soon. The last thing is get in touch with... Oh, you can read the blog, like Missy said. And wow, man, I have really screwed this ending up. So I'm just going to let the music run out, and I'm just going to keep talking. So you can go to the Living Reminders blog at livingreminders.com. Check out all the great articles there. And that's about it. Wow, I'm awful at running a show. I'm not good. This is normally when Mary says, until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Mary Larson. And no, I'm not Mary Larson. My name is Blake. We're the Living Reminders, and we're still here.